Everybody, I'm Petey Cone Fettos, and as the Beatles lyrics suggest, that we all need help from time to time in our lives. As you all know, I'm a psychotherapist and a sex therapist and an author of the groundbreaking book on relationships for better, for worse, forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. This is a book for all of us who really want to be smart and savvy about assessing who is right for us and who is wrong for us before committing to any serious relationship. But you know, when I tell people about the book and I tell people about my research and my 10-step formula, I notice oftentimes it's like, this is not so sexy. This is not so romantic. But the reality is that despite all of the self-help books and coaches and relationship therapists, is that we really are in a downward spiral when it comes to our personal relationships. So the reality, my friends, is that we really need a lot of extra help when it comes to finding and maintaining and choosing a loving and healthy partner. And you know, when I think about it, I mean, we assess, right? We assess every single thing in our life, our moving companies, our cell phones, our computers, our moisturizers, our lipsticks, and yet we never seem to really think about or use the word assessment or evaluate when it comes to who we are going to let into our lives. And these days, I think more than ever, we have to be very, very careful who we let into our lives, and not just in our romantic lives, in our personal lives, our friendships, our colleagues, yes, and our therapists as well. So what is the Ask Beatty Show all about? Well, it is in one word, it is really about empowerment. It is about empowerment. We talk about all of the things that we can do, not just think about and not just dream about, to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So on my show, we talk about mental health issues, sexuality, and relationships, and how and what to do again to maximize our physical, our emotional, our psychological well-being, despite the stressors of life and despite what our history may have been or may not have been. So I have a mantra. And of course, for those of you who've been listening to the show, and I cannot believe it is going on to the 10th year, my mantra is to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can things that are not working in our life. And we have to really be willing to be honest with ourselves and take a look. I like to take a look on a very, very regular basis at everything. My relationships, my friendships, my professional life, my physical well-being, my emotional well-being, and to be really, really honest about, you know, how are things really going? And that is what this Ask Beatty weekly segment of How Are You Doing is really, really all about. Because there are a lot of wide-ranging questions that can really provide us with a framework in which to assess how well or how badly we are doing in our lives. And our answers, will provide us with an opportunity to probe, reflect, and grow, and if need be, to make some significant changes. And your responses are really for you alone, so that I ask you every single week to dig deep and answer each question really, really honestly, because this is not the time or place to try and fool ourselves. So, of course, number one is looking at our mental health. Now, how are you generally doing? I mean, remember, the fact is that we all go through lots and lots of ups and downs in our life. But if you're finding that the depression or the anxiety, or that you're taking too many pills, over-the-counter pills or prescription medication pills, or that you're drinking too much, or that you are just not in a good place, and it's not just one day or 1 week, but that you're looking back on your life. And for so many of my patients, as you know, I have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. It's been a lifelong struggle. And since we can't do anything about what did or did not happen even 30 seconds ago, the questions that I really want to ask you are, what are you willing to do today if your depression, your anxiety, your substance abuse, your body dysmorphia, your sleeping disorder, if these things are really and truly playing havoc with your life? I mean, you have an opportunity, not that I have all the answers of the world, but you actually have an opportunity every single Monday afternoon live here on the Ask Beattie Show. Of course, the time is 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To call me with any questions or concerns, we can discuss, we can debate, we can disagree. And you know what's really, really interesting is that when I first met Dr. Gary Null a number of years ago and talked about me doing the show, it was hopefully it was we were planning that it was going to be a live call-in counseling show, because I had hosted a number of different call-in counseling shows on mainstream radio. And I think what happened with the computer and people's work days and perhaps the time of the day, it did not generally turn in to that kind of a show. But I do encourage you, if you are listening right now, and I received a call, actually an email last week from a woman from Los Angeles who I'm now working with, and she said to me, she said, you know, I've been listening to you for years and years and years. She said, not sure exactly what it was that you said. I was probably talking about something in the area of relationships that finally made her send me an email, give me a call, and now we are working together and trying to figure out some things about her relationship. But again, the number is 888-874-4888. So you don't need to be shy. So if there's been something on your mind, whether it's about your relationship or whether it's about your sex life or lack of or your mental health, feel free, give yourself permission to really use what I think is a real opportunity to talk to an expert, me, and see where your questions and see where our discussion can possibly take you. So again, looking at your mental health, and if things are not going well, again, the real question is, what are you going to do about it? And I really hope that I've convinced you over all these years that we do not need to navigate life struggles on our own. You know, I think about when I was a competitive tennis player in Canada. I was actually number 10. I was ranked number 10 as a junior. My team, in quotes, consisted of my dad, who was my coach. Really, he was my coach off and on the courts. And yet, you look at the teams in the tennis world and in so many other sporting venues where there are all kinds of people who are working with the athletes, who work with performers to help us maximize our game, whatever our game happens to be. So again, you don't need to do this on your own. So looking at your relationships, and not just romantic relationships, you have people in your life, your friends, hopefully your family, you can really count on. who care about you and who you really can depend upon. And hopefully your answer is yes. And I mean, I treat a number of people who don't have family, or they certainly don't have healthy family relationships, and are spending their time trying to reach out to people in other venues, whether we're talking about synagogues or churches or gyms or anywhere, because our social network makes all the difference in the world. And if you've been listening to my shows where I've been talking about the research on happiness, I mean, what you will have learned, what we've all learned, that it is our significant relationships that really make the difference in our lives in terms of our being able to be happy. And if the relationships that you are currently engaged in are not working for you, I'm not suggesting that you just take off and that you end relationships. But what I am hoping is that you are in relationships with people who are really willing to work through the difficulties, the upset, the anger, the disappointments, the tough times. And that is why, when I go back to, thinking about people will ask me all the time, they'll say, Beanie, when it comes to relationships, what do you think are really the most important ingredients that do make or break relationships? Well, as unsexy and as romantic as my answers are, it happens to be emotional communication and problem solving. Because if we can't deal with our issues, our own individual issues, our issues with other people, when you think about it, then how is it possible? How is it possible to be able to have a good relationship with anyone? So again, I'm not suggesting that you leave your unhappy or disappointing relationship, but what I am suggesting is that you sit down with your partner or your family member or your child or your colleague and take a look at, where you've been, and if there are issues, as there are in every single relationships, to come up with a plan about how to go about improving the quality of your relationship. In fact, there was a really interesting, and I thought a really good article in the New York Times, which I use, as you know, as a source a lot. And the headline was "How to Make Romance a Priority in 2022." So this was January 2022. And one of the things that I really loved, and this was a quote by Julie Gottman, and we all know about the Gottman Institute, and she says, "Say goodbye to last year." And she talks about that before couples can look forward to a positive new year, we need to have closure with one that ended, which means to take some time and say to your partner, we're talking about romantic relationships, so how do you think that we have done in this past year? And many people, they don't only take the opportunity, but they don't really think about just evaluating and examining the inner landscape of their relationships and figuring out what to build or rebuild. And Julie Gottman suggests that you ask each other what she calls big open-ended questions. And they might include things like, what were the highlights or big moments of joy you experienced with me, hopefully? And what were the lowest points? And what was that like for you? And how can we, as a couple, how can we make meaning from what we've gone through? And what are the lessons that we are taking from this year? And I know that many of you have heard me say this over and over again, questioning lessons to be learned, because there are always lessons to be learned, even from the most disappointing and from the most difficult of situations. And I think that the answers, if you have this kind of discussion, if we're talking about with your partner, You know, your answers are also going to help each person understand how the partner has changed from a year ago and what you can do as a couple to be more supportive to each other going forward. And as my late father used to tell me every single day, and it's a wonderful reminder, I think, for all of us, is that today is a new day. And we don't need to repeat history, and we don't need to repeat behaviors with ourselves or with others that simply are not working. So we have an opportunity every single day in our life to be proactive and make some changes. So, okay, we've looked at how is your mental health and how are your relationships, and what about your professional life? Are you really enjoying what you're doing? I mean, and there's certainly days that, you know, we are not going to enjoy what we're doing, but overall, are you contented with your job? Are you contented with your career? And hopefully your answer is yes. But if it is not, again, the question then becomes, what are you going to do? And are you willing to really get out of your comfort zone, in quotes, and begin to explore options? What about your physical health? Are you taking care of yourself? And of course, Gary Nell talks about this all the time, the importance of exercise, the importance of making sure that you have a good plant-based diet and that you are getting sufficient, you know, vitamins and nutrients. And I think it's very easy to make a lot of excuses, you know, why we can't eat well and why we can't exercise. And, you know, today is a beautiful, beautiful day here in New York City. And of course, I had patients to see this morning and I had a show to prepare for this afternoon. And yet it made me feel so, so good to be able to walk about 20 blocks. You know, the sun was shining, the sky was blue. It just made me feel just so much more energized and so much more alive. So again, we don't need to have gym equipment. We don't need to belong to a gym. We could always just leave our houses or our apartments and take a walk. And it really does wonderful, wonderful things for our psyche and for our bodies as well. And what about sleep? You know, I hear from so many people that I treat that they don't sleep. They simply don't sleep. So I ask them, so what are you doing? Well, they are either working or they are playing games or they are on the computer or other devices where they are communicating in some form with other people. And I think just like other parts of our life, we have to be self-disciplined, and getting 7 to 8 hours of restful sleep happens to be important. It really happens to be important. So again, if we're looking at the questions of how am I doing, we need to be honest with ourselves. And there is plenty of evidence-based research and knowledge that can guide us and can help us make decisions that are truly in our best interest. And yet it is very, very easy to not really be honest with ourselves. And yet it is our avoidance, it is our denial, it is our blame, our self-blame and defensiveness that keep us in a downward spiral. And as I've been saying for years, because I have such great respect for people who make the decision they're going to come into therapy, and it's not an easy thing to do, certainly not initially. It does. It takes a lot of courage to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve the things that continue to get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And yet, what are the consequences if we don't? Because if we refuse to step up to the plate and confront our demons, the old ones and the new ones, it becomes increasingly more difficult to fully enjoy our lives. So I would like to be talking with all of you right now, or at least be seeing you on a Zoom. And I'm just wondering, like, what are you thinking? And are you thinking that perhaps today is the day that you are going to be able to make some changes that are really in your best interest? And, you know, I hope every single week that there is really some little thing, some little motivational thing that I might say that will get you to take some steps forward so that you are going to be able to live your life more in ways that are really good for you and that are in your best interest. Well, there was an article that I actually saw when Jim and I were in Sarasota on the Michigan Daily. And I believe that the Michigan Daily is a student newspaper. And it was the headline that really grabbed my attention. Modern romance is dead. Now, this was the headline. I don't believe that modern romance is dead, but this was the headline. And it was written by a student whose name is Kate Moyer. Modern romance is dead. And Tinder, you know, we know the dating app, Tinder, the site, killed it. So this is what she said. And again, very, very curious what you feel and what you think about this. So she says that from FaceTime and instant messaging to the plethora of social media platforms on the internet, interconnected, in quotes, has perhaps become the most fitting term to describe contemporary society. Of course, I think we are not really interconnected in real terms and connected, but that's another story. And indeed, with our ability to communicate with anyone at the click of a button, we now have more opportunities to connect than ever before. Well, at least theoretically, we do have more opportunities to connect, again, depending on how you want to define connect, than ever before. And yet all of this considered, she says, one question remains. And what is the question? Well, why do so many Americans feel more lonely now than ever? And that is absolutely my experience in talking to friends, in talking to patients, and people are feeling very disconnected, alienated, and lonely. She says that the answer may be rooted in the decline of genuine and authentic relationships, particularly romantic relationships. A study conducted at the University of California in Berkeley revealed that the number of Americans who do not have a steady romantic partner has increased by 50% since 1986. And she says that many experts are attributing the statistic to the rise of social media and casual dating apps, with nearly half of young adults in the United States reporting having used an online dating platform. Apps such as Tinder and Hinge and Bumble and OkCupid are all marketed with the promise to increase your chances of finding love. However, and I checked out these statistics, and this young woman is correct. She says that the numbers don't seem to add up, despite the high volume of individuals who use these dating sites, 53 million and counting in 2022. Guess how many? Guess what percentage of people actually report forming a committed relationship? So I was asking a lot of people, what did you think? How many people do you think actually connect? And that number is only 12%. So 12% of these millions and millions and millions of individuals reported eventually forming a committed relationship. So she goes on to ask, I think, a very important question. So she says, why is this the case? The ultimate goal of online dating apps should be to function as a conduit in creating committed relationships. But the realm of online dating, it's become a multi-billion dollar industry. Yes, it is a business. It is an industry. It's an industry that profits primarily off of user addiction, especially by keeping its users singles. And this is what she says. The way that the industry accomplishes this is twofold, relying on qualities of what she calls gamification and what psychologist Barry Schwartz refers to as the paradox of choice. So what does this all mean? Okay. The presence of the choice paradox in online dating is perhaps best understood through the analogy of online shopping. So, what have we learned about online shopping after all these years? Well, studies have shown that as shoppers are exposed to more options for potential purchases, they are paradoxically less likely to be satisfied with their ultimate decisions. As our brains become inundated with a variety of choices, we often experience choice paralysis. Do you think that that's true? If you're looking at online shopping sites, you find that if you're looking and looking and listening to all these people who are trying to sell us a variety of different services and products, that you find that you are becoming somewhat paralyzed. So she says that an anxiety-induced state that prevents us from making a resounding decision. On Tinder, the user's experience of choice overload has become a frequent occurrence. And in the emergence of what some are calling serial swipers, many users can be seen displaying strong hesitations to commit to a singular option due to fears of missing out on a potentially better one. I mean, what do you think about that? So this young woman, whose name again is Kate Moyer, she's saying that the resulting world, and so curious, I'd be so interested in hearing what you all have to say about this. She says that the resulting world of online dating has become a breeding ground for objectification, sexual harassment, and insincerity as choices are increasingly influenced by abundance and appearances rather than genuine compatibility. The other driving factor between or behind the addictive quality of these dating apps is gamification. So what does gamification mean? So she quotes an author, Shull, who is the author of Addiction by Design, defines gamification as when developers loosely apply game elements to other aspects of life to capture attention, motivate engagement, and drive revenue. And Shull explains that these dating apps are indifferent to positive user outcomes such as committed relationships or marriage. I wonder how many of you are on the dating sites right now, and I'd be so interested and curious to hear what your experiences have been. Because this Shull says that rather they are driven by the ultimate goal, the companies, of increasing revenue and ensuring that their users remain on these dating apps is one of the best ways to do so. And accordingly, these platforms are engineered to be addictive, utilizing the same game-like qualities found in gambling and slot machines to keep the audiences engaged. You think that that is true? Some other statistics here that were really concerning. Specifically, did you know that 30% of Tinder users are married. And because of this, the online dating world has become a hotbed for cheating. And I think that the offline dating world can also be used as a hotbed for cheating and non-committal sex. And users find themselves immersed in an endless twisted game where matches and hookups function as points to keep scores. Studies have shown that women are significantly more likely to experience online abuse and harassment on these platforms than men. And she cites a study of women who had some type of dating platform in the last 15 years, and over one third of them. So 15-year research looking at women, over one third of them reported that they were sexually assaulted by someone they met on one of these apps. Now, I don't know whether they felt that they were sexually assaulted, online, or whether or not they were sexually assaulted if and when they actually met the people in person. And reports of lower self-esteem and feelings of objectification are also not uncommon. And the ability of users to create an idealized, filtered version of themselves online can promote unhealthy thinking. Users are increasingly being conditioned to think that this filtered version of themselves is the only one that is reasonable to present to the outside world. So here are my thoughts about online dating. I think that it's true. We have thousands and thousands of possibilities when it comes to potentially meeting someone. But what I believe, and I guess fortunately for me, I was married and never involved and never engaged in the online dating world. But my suggestion to those of you who are is that if you feel that there may be a potential connection, that after two or three interchanges online, that you make the decision to meet in person. And in that way, you are going to be able to find out more about the potential and about the reality of who this person is and who this person is not. I have known so many people, friends and patients who've had this online chit chat and online dialogue going for months, and with a couple of situations for almost a year. And then when they finally met, they discovered that there was absolutely really nothing there that was substantial or real or that was worthwhile to continue to pursue. So this is a way to maybe narrow down some possible choices. But again, unless you go through my 10-step formula for assessing who's right for you and who's wrong for you, whether or not you do this, or whether or not you meet someone online, whether or not you meet someone in a mosque or a church or on the street or through a matchmaker, we really need to be savvy, and we really need to empower ourselves in order to keep ourselves safe. So there is not a shortcut. I know a lot of people who have, met online. Some of the relationships lasted a little while. Most of them actually did not. And of course, the statistics are telling us that only 12% of people who are meeting online end up in a committed relationship. It's the assessment process. It is the assessment process that is going to tell us whether or not there is even a possibility that the person we have met on one of these dating sites, or again, whether it's in a mosque or a church or any place else, is somebody where there is really a real life potential of having a healthy and wonderful and joyful relationship. So in that way, my friends, there is not a shortcut. So after a couple of interchanges, two or three, you've met online, you're texting, you're zooming. It is time, in my view, to get real and meet the person in person, and then use my 10-step formula to find out who they are. And it is going to take you approximately a year to go through this assessment process, unless there are clearly a lot of red flags that you do need to take seriously, where you would then hopefully extricate the relationship as quickly as possible. There was a very upsetting piece in the business section of the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and the heading is "Retirees Are Losing Their Life Savings to Romance Scams, and Here's What to Do and to Know." So, con artists, they understand that there are a lot of lonely people out there, not just older people, but particularly older ones. They're using dating sites to prey on lonely people, particularly older ones, in a pattern that accelerated apparently during the isolation of the pandemic. And this is according to federal data. So con artists, they are using dating apps to prey and meet lonely people. And apparently, this has become a growing target group. And a pattern, apparently, that accelerated during the isolation of the coronavirus, romance scams. I mean, who would have thought? Romance scams claimed $139 million, $139 million from adults age 60 and older in 2020, according to data from the Federal Trade Commission. And this apparently is up from $84 million the year before. So we went from $84 million where people were being scammed to $139 million. In one of the more alarming episodes of what has become a leading type of fraud aimed at older Americans, and I think you may have heard me talk about this last week, a Holocaust survivor was swindled out of his life savings of nearly $3 million, according to a federal indictment unsealed in New York last week. What does that tell me about this older Holocaust survivor? This person was obviously somebody who was isolated and who was so lonely and so wanting to believe that somebody cared for them and loved them, and that maybe they were going to have another chance at love. So I want to share with you how these romance scams work. So, a loaded home as COVID-19 spread in the summer of 2020, and this is about a real person, Kate Kleinart decided to accept a Facebook friend request from a handsome stranger. Okay, she's online, she wants to meet, she sees a handsome person, why not give it a shot? Okay, so this handsome stranger described himself as a Norwegian doctor working in Iraq, and he called himself Tony. So, after a couple of months of daily communication on encrypted messaging apps, Tony began asking for money. Red flag number one. By December 2020, Miss Kleinart, 69, had given Tony and two people claiming to be his children some $39,000 in gift cards. I would give anything to have an opportunity to speak to Miss Kleinard. I mean, yes, lonely, hoping, wanting to find love, perhaps to have a family that she may not have had, and maybe desperate enough, gullible enough to be sending a stranger $39,000 in gift cards. So the scam apparently devoured Ms. Kleinhardt's savings, her late husband's. Okay, so she was a widow. Her late husband's life insurance, her pension, and her income from Social Security, leaving her destitute. Again, to not blame Ms. Kleiner, but what that tells me how desperately lonely she was and how desperately lonely so many people are, that they forget to really use their good common sense and their hopes and their wishes and their dreams for connection really take over, despite the fact that they are making decisions that are clearly, clearly, clearly not in their best interest. So Ms. Kleinhardt was living in Glen Olden, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia at the time, and now lives in Lancaster County. She went to the local police and then the state police, and she was told that there was nothing that they could do. And she says that the loss that hurts the most is losing his love. So she believed, she needed to believe that this man loved her, that she was in love, that he was in love. So she says that the thing that hurt the most is losing his love and losing the family that I thought I was going to have. So after her husband died, and we don't know whether or not she had children of her own, the depth of loneliness and disconnect and the longing to want to be loved was so great. And it is for so many people that we don't think it through in a more logical way. And that's been one of the big, big criticisms of my book, by the way, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. People didn't like that it was not sexy and it was not romantic. And as I mentioned, for all these years, it is an assessment format. It's like having me in your purse or having me in your wallet doing a very, very unsexy, unromantic diagnostic assessment. As I was saying to somebody today, for me to be able to do an in-depth diagnostic assessment might take 2 or 3 hours. For you, it is probably going to take, as you go through all of the different areas that need to be really looked at, it's probably going to take you about a year, unless you see significant red flags that are not being worked through, that don't make any sense, where you need to give yourself permission to exit the relationship as soon as possible. So Ms. Kleinhardt, she had hopes and dreams. So Ms. Kleinhardt, this is how this works. The scammer followed a typical playbook, experts are saying, claiming to be a professional working abroad, exploiting a victim's loneliness to quickly establish a bond, building an imagined future with them, and then planning an in-depth meeting that depended on the victim's willingness to part with money. See, I'm only going to see you. I'd love to see you. I'd love to be with you. I'd maybe like to spend my life with you, but you are going to have to pay in order to get me over to see you wherever you might be living. And a lawyer was saying, he says, I've seen elders mortgage their houses, borrow large sums of money from their neighbors, empty out their entire retire accounts, okay, because they are hoping and dreaming and wishing and needing to find that love connection. And Michael Delaney, who is a Chicago-based lawyer, he says that it is absolutely astonishing to me how much money someone can actually get out of an elderly person account before anyone really notices and puts a stop to it. So the question then becomes, I mean, older people could be very lonely, younger people could be very lonely, middle-aged people can be lonely, whether or not they're male or female or gay or straight or trans or divorced or widowed. So why are older people, why are they targeted? Well, according to the research, while young people are more likely to fall victim to online scams overall, older people are more susceptible to romance scams. And the reason experts say is simple. They usually have more money. Now, there is a woman, Peaches Sturgo. She was charged with wire fraud in the federal case involving the Holocaust survivor. Now, she was amazing. She was so shrewd and vindictive and disgusting that she was able to extract some $2.8 million from the victim, who was an 87-year-old Manhattan man, whom she met on a dating website. And federal prosecutors said that she used some of the money, this is a myth, to pay for. So she got this man, this Holocaust survivor, who probably was a widower, who had his own sores, his own problems, his own loneliness, to be able to get him to give her $2.8 million. So what did she do with the money? She bought a condo in Florida, rooms at the Ritz-Carlton, a Corvette, and luxury watches and clothing. And apparently, the median loss from a romance scam for people 70 and older, medium in 2021, was $9,000, according to the FTC, compared with $2,400 across all age groups. So apparently, what we're seeing is that older people are the targets, and they are the targets who, up to this point, have given away millions and millions and millions of dollars. But when older adults lose money, I mean, they lose more money because they have more money to lose. And the FBI has sounded the alarm about romance scams in 2021. So this is the FBI said that Americans of all age groups coughed up more than $1 billion. $1 billion to con artists, up from more than $362 million in 2018. So what are the lessons to be learned for all of you, for all of us who happen to be single and online? I hope that the lesson is that you don't give away a penny. I mean, if somebody starts to ask you for money, that needs to be a huge, huge, huge red flag. And the question, of course, people have asked is that can dating sites be held liable? So apparently, the Match Group in 2019, alleging the company which runs online dating platforms like Match.com and Tinder and Hinge, was allowing fraudsters to disguise themselves as normal daters. So they were sued. The Match Group was sued by the FTS. Wonder what really happened with the case. So, again, what are the lessons to be learned? You know, loneliness or not, you know, I'm really hoping, I really, really hoping that for those of you who are online, and I know that you're lonely, and I know that you want to find love, and I know that you want to connect, that you are going to take this advice seriously. Number one, after a couple of interchanges that you are going to meet in person and go through, if you feel that you want to get to know this person, to be willing to use my formula and to go through a serious, serious assessment process. And number two, to never, ever, ever, ever give this person who you don't know any money at all. Now, I'm not talking about a cup of coffee. I'm not talking about occasionally paying for a meal, but it is so sad. It is so sad to hear how, Kate Kleinbert and the Holocaust survivor, the 87-year-old man, how they were defrauded of this enormous amount of money. And as Ms. Kleinert said, the most tragic thing about her circumstance, the loss that hurts the most, it wasn't the money. It was losing what she thought was this man's love and losing the family, his family, that she thought that she was going to have. So we need to be smart. We need to take care of ourselves. We need to do what is in our best interest, regardless of how lonely we really are feeling. You know, I found over the years, like before I did the book, and before I really, really became committed to my formula for assessing who's right for you and who's wrong for you, I was one of these people who, although I never considered myself to be naive, I would come home and I would say, I really met this lovely woman and I really met this lovely man, or I really, really met this lovely colleague. And what I've learned over the years is to never, ever, ever make that kind of a statement again. So I'll say to my patients, and of course I'm asking you the same question, what would Beattie say? What do I say when I am meeting someone? And what is my takeaway? And what is the takeaway that I would like you to take away from this conversation? And the best, really the only thing that I could say that would make any sense at all when I'm meeting new people is for me to be able to say this: I have met somebody who appears. The person appears to be nice and warm and smart and gentle and have generosity of spirit. And I tell myself this all the time, and that I will find out in about a year from now who this person really is or isn't. And if there are a lot of red flags, I will immediately give myself permission to extricate the relationship. But I want to tell you something very interesting about Kate Moyer. She is a student who wrote this article on Modern Romance is Dead and Tinder Killed It. So when I had read her article, I reached out to her and I wanted to have her on the show. And I thought it was a really, really important article to be able to share with you. And she responded immediately and she said, yes, yes, she'd like to come on the show and maybe we could collaborate in some fashion. I'm not sure in what fashion, but that was her response. So what happened to Tate Moyer? Well, I emailed her and tried to contact her a number of times and never, ever, ever heard back from her again. So in her piece, when she talks about objectification and insincerity online, I mean, she turned out to be somebody, and at least I was able to see this very, very early on, and had no need for her to be a guest and had no need for her to have any kind of a relationship, professional relationship with me. I was able to see very, very quickly that she clearly did not walk the walk. She was someone who, came across as someone who was sincere and cared about people and was not going to objectify people. But in the final analysis, what she said had nothing to do at all with how she behaved. So those are the words that I used to teach my daughter, Jordana. It's not what you say. Ultimately, it is what we do, and do being the key word in all of this. So where does the time go? I have all these articles in front of me that I really wanted to share with you, letters that I've received from Dance Papers. As you know, I am the advice columnist for Dance Papers in the Hamptons and in Palm Beach, and for the Winnipeg Jewish Post and News. But it's amazing how an hour really comes and goes here on my show, on the Ask Me show. Well, in the couple of minutes that we have left, again, I'm hoping that there is something that I said today that will be an important takeaway for you, because this is about lessons to be learned. You know, I really appreciate the fact that you all take the time every single week to listen to the Ask Beanie Show. And again, I would love to get some feedback. I would like to hear from you whether or not there are other subjects or issues that you would really like me to tackle. And that way we would be able to have a really reciprocal kind of a relationship. But, okay. If that's not going to happen, I will continue to try and educate and empower you and in all the possible ways that I know how. So I want to leave you with my two weekly messages that I end every single Ask Beauty show with. And of course, the first is to make sure that you are doing things every single day, which means self-monitoring yourself, that you are living your life and doing things in ways that are in your best interest. And it's important to pause and make sure and ask yourself, is this, whatever this is this good for me? And secondarily, of course, we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. So again, thank you so much for listening every single week here on the Ask Beanie Show. And I hope you have a really good rest of the day and a good week. And I will be with you next Monday and every single Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in New York. So take care of yourself, and let's find ways to better take care of others. Goodbye, everybody.